You're muttering.
I don't mutter.
Aye, you do. You mutter less when something's troubling you.
I blame you. Stubbornness. It's entirely from your side of the family.
I take it the talk didn't go too well, then.
I don't know what to do.
Speak to her, dear.
I do speak to her. She just doesn't listen.
Come on, now. Pretend I'm Merida. Speak to me. What would you say?
I can't do this.
Sure you can. There. That's my queen. Right, here we go. I don't want to get married. I want to stay single and let my hair flow in the wind as I ride through the glen, firing arrows into the sunset.
Hi and welcome to the Indie Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Damian.
And this is 60 Minutes. No, this is Douglas.
Actually, I should really say this is a very drinking Andrew, because I've been drinking since we were supposed to have started.
Oh, wow.
So this is like my third scotch right now.
Ooh, that means you're feeling something by now, probably, huh? Yes or no?
Yeah, I mean, I'm there. I mean, I was enjoying the Pro Evo until you guys disturbed me horribly.
Nothing like alcohol and video games. That has never led to anything positive ever.
That's on a side note, it has led to something positive, because I've mentioned this guy before. There's a guy who does a lot of YouTube videos, who I like a lot, called Freddie Wong, and he started this new series of videos called Stumbled Into or something like that. Stumbled Something. And it's basically him and his friends playing video games while drinking. They did one with Dead Space 3, is it? Or is it just Dead Space? I can't remember. And it was kind of funny. So yeah, there has been something positive coming out of video games and drinking.
I don't think you understand what the word positive means. If you think that those videos are a positive in any way, shape, or form, and not a complete waste of time, you're high. Well, no, you're drunk. You're not high. So shall we start? Douglas, you've probably seen the least, so we're pressed
well,
for time.
Okay, alright, fair enough. I have seen one thing that both myself and Damian have we saw together, and I'm sure we'll discuss it together today. Sure. But we watched Zero Dark Thirty.
Yes, we did.
I'm the motherfucker.
Yes. Directed by one Catherine Bigelow, starring just about everybody.
Yeah. Can I think of an actor, they're probably in there.
I probably knew that these people were in this movie, but just forgot. But
I didn't.
Every, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes.
You're like,
me and Damian both would stop. We would hear each other, like, you know, give that what the fuck kind of
and then turn to each other and smile.
Nod because we were in approval.
Especially
I have to ask, since the only reason Douglas goes to movies is because he gets someone to go with him, it sounds very much like Damian went with Douglas. Am I correct?
No. It was Zero Dark Thirty is out. Douglas went, can we watch this movie? And we went to watch that movie.
But you went, you were together,
yes,
at the screening,
we
right?
Watched it, yeah.
Yeah. So, is this a situation like The Master, where you were alone together watching the movie? At
not quite, no. Not
it
quite.
Was,
it was
real
not
bad.
Full, but
it was real bad. Douglas is understating it. We're in three, so it was the big theater.
Yeah.
And there
probably
if there was
20
people there, I'd, that would be a lot. So, yeah, it was real bad, but not the worst. Slash the best.
But
to be fair though, there was points in the movie that me and Douglas were laughing. And I could see that the rest of people that were in the movie could not understand why in the middle of this very serious movie, there's two idiots in the center of the screen, of the theater, dying with laughter. Which was fun. It's nice to know that we're those people.
Yes. Well, I always have been. I mean, I still get shit for laugh. So, have you watched Red Dragon?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know that there's... No, this is just me with a terrible sense of humor. A sick, twisted sense of humor, right? So you know at the end of that movie, there's a shootout.
Right.
I don't know why I found that funny, but I did. And I bawled out in laughter for like a good 5 minutes. And some people still don't talk to me.
You can't see why,
though. I'm trying to remember the end of Red Dragon. No, it's not coming to me.
I think was it Ed Norton was just shooting Ray Fiennes,
right? They're in the house
or something like right. that.
And then it moved from the house, and then they had to
Didn't the house blow up or something?
Right. Well, the house burned down. Yeah. I don't know about blowing up. And then, you know, there was a bit of a chase, and then shots fired. I don't know why Douglas was laughing.
Mm. I can't remember what was so funny about it, but something funny. Caught me. Yeah. But yes, Zero Dark Thirty, great movie, great cast. Need I say more?
Right. So there's no point in talking about how good the movie is, because no doubt the movie is good.
Yeah.
So I'll just bitch about Carib. Well, maybe a small amount.
Yep.
Not about Carib as a whole, just about my experience watching the movie. So the movie is 4x3, and Carib, instead of putting, because there's blinders you can put up in front of the projector, so that the excess light is not.
Hold on. One second. Did you just say the movie is 4x3?
Yeah.
The movie isn't 4x3.
What aspect ratio is the movie?
The movie is 16x9.
There's no... Alright, the movie me and Douglas saw.
You don't seem to understand. Mm-hmm. That's what I was pointing out to you at the beginning.
Because I remember this clearly. They did that to me with Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And I was so fucking pissed.
Yeah, Andrew, you know what happened? We got in there. The movie turned on and I was like, this is not 16x9. And I turned to Damien and I made a joke. I said, Damien, you think they're going to give us... And I looked up there and I was like, 20% of our money back because we're missing that much of the picture.
Douglas, I just assumed that the movie was in 4x3. And then, because they had the extra light shining on the thing, mm-hmm. but there was no picture. But all right, so just add the fact that they showed it in the wrong aspect ratio. to the list. Apart from poor projection, horrendous. I mean, the audio at some points was like you couldn't hear what on. There's a point where there's an explosion inside the military base, right? And I remember watching some clip on the internet with that explosion, and you hear the full weight of that explosion on the clip, but you do not get that sense when you sit in the theater, and that was also pretty poor. But the worst thing was they picked what might be the worst point to go to intermission. me and Douglas sat there, we're like, are you, like, when they cut it, we went, oh, all right.
all right, I'll cut it out, but tell me exactly what point did they cut the movie.
All right, so you know when they had the explosion in the military base, and she's like, all right, she's redoubling efforts. Her entire thing is, it is time for us to murder Bin, and then just cut and go to intervention. Like, wait, all right, guys.
Mid-sentence,
like, she didn't get. She didn't finish saying the word and then just cut. You know? You don't need to hear this. You don't need to hear this. Yes, we know she's sad, and we know that you're interested and hooked as to how she's going to now continue her pursuit, but we're cutting it here because we feel like this is a good time to send you guys. But the
guys,
movie is.
Guys, I know terrific. I've said this a couple of times, and I don't mean to be a dick. Mm-hmm. Saying this to you guys because you're at Carib, but I'm so happy I'm not there anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm even happier that when I was there for Christmas and I went to see The Hobbit and Django, I happened to magically go on the day that they decided, you know, we're not playing any intermission, just keep going.
Well, there was no intermission for Les Miserables, so yeah. That was good.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see Les Miserables?
No, we did not watch Les Miserables. Less miserables.
Less miserable.
We don't watch musicals, or Damien doesn't.
No,
no, he doesn't.
Not on purpose.
But yes, that was a good movie. I'm going to I'm going to add another thing that I've seen this week.
Sure.
It really shouldn't count, but I'm just so excited to watch it. It's David Fincher's new television show, the remake.
Yes,
of
I've
House
been
of
watching
Cards.
That.
Yeah, I saw the first 8 minutes of the first episode.
I've watched
Damon
the first
came
seven
in.
Episodes.
Wow.
But that, I mean, I couldn't tell you if it's good or bad yet. However, I'm just going to go with Bias Douglas, and David Fincher is awesome. Kevin Spacey is awesome. And in the space of the first 8 minutes, you can see the amount of money that Netflix has spent on this TV series and on the star power that they've put in there.
It's their first one, great. So they have to.
No, it's not their first one.
No. This is their first real one.
Yeah,
They had that terrible one.
Don't call that terrible. I like that one.
I don't care.
Even though I haven't watched all of the episodes.
That's
the one where he goes to Norway.
Right.
Yeah.
They had that terrible one that they bought from somebody.
Lillehammer, yes.
Right. This is their first. Yo, we're putting
actually,
all the money in.
You're right, you know, that's exactly what they're doing. They're like, listen. We are okay right now,
mm-hmm.
but we want more people to come into our service.
Going in
so
for
everybody. Essentially, they're like, we want to be HBO.
No, they want They want HBO to realize that they have real competition on the internet in the internet space,
mm-hmm.
and they're not only going after HBO; they're going after TV.
Yeah, no, of course. Well, no, they're not going after TV. Let me tell you why: because they don't have current titles. If they had current, then yes, I'd 100% agree with you.
TV will only be good for live sports, live events, essentially.
Uh-huh.
And then everything else, the future of television is on demand.
No,
and
of course.
Netflix is ahead of it. So
Netflix is not quite ahead of it. Well, they're ahead of the game in the sense that they have a wide library, but their library is dated. It's like when you go to a rental video.
Right.
Who has better is Hulu and Amazon.
That's fine.
Both of those guys, you can get it like the day after.
That is fine. But that is a situation now where people still wait to a specific time to watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
But that won't be the case when
the whole world
is on demand.
No, I understand. But all I'm saying is that Netflix won't get there until they get that current content, and so it doesn't take me a year to be able to watch How I Met Your Mother or Justified or whatever it is I want to watch. That's all I'm saying.
And was it
but people like
Dante,
but people like even Amazon Instant are filling that gap of where I can watch Justified every week the day after it plays on TV.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. Amazon is there. Hulu is there. You know? Hulu, you pay one flat fee and you get it. Amazon, you have to pay per episode. But they both have current content, and that is what makes them, I think, gives them the foot up, in a sense, to Netflix. I don't think those two... Well, Hulu is pretty big, but I in my mind, I'm not sure. This is uneducated, but I would think that Netflix probably is the bigger one in terms of subscribers
by far.
I think Netflix has the biggest subscribing base, but herein lies the question, right? And this definitely plays into Damien's new mantra over the last few years. Damn you, alarm. The thing that Netflix has done with this new series, House of Cards, is unlike any other television series that's been released, at least in any format, even before. Because this is, as you said, this is Netflix's first thing in going, this is our thing, you can all watch it now, is that they're releasing the entire season one go. They're not saying, alright, here's episode one, come back next week for episode two, which is what TV does. Is it just saying that this is a new model that our subscribers and our customers want? Because this is what Damien does with his television shows, where he sits down and he says, I'm not watching Breaking Bad until it's done, so that I have it all piled up on my DVR, and I can just barrel through them in one go because they're that good. So will it eventually get to the point where the TV paradigm of waiting each week is completely out of whack, to the point that we're saying, all right, I don't care how long you take to film it, just when you're done, put everything up one time and I will sit down and choose my time to watch it.
Yeah,
all in one go.
I think it might also, one thing I'd say though is that this is not the first time Netflix has done this. Netflix did this, I think, with almost every, all of their original programming. They did it with Lilyhammer. I imagine they're going to do it with Arrested Development when it comes out this month.
Yeah,
right?
No, they definitely plan to do it with Arrested Development. Yeah. But Lilyhammer was a co-production with Starz, I believe.
Yeah.
So Starz got to run it as well.
Well, yeah, but that's Starz' problem. What I'm saying is when it went on Netflix, everything went on day one, and I was able to watch all the episodes day one.
Right. So my question to you, Douglas, and I'm not talking so much about the fee, I'm talking about the actual structure and availability.
Mm-hmm.
Would it work better for you to see an entire season go up one time and say, there, I can barrel through, as opposed to I have to wait each week to watch an episode?
I'd probably prefer it if you put everything up one time. I mean, I wouldn't watch it all at once. I'd watch it all at once in the sense that it wouldn't necessarily be, I have to watch this Mondays at 10 o'clock. But I'd probably, like, for instance, what I do, right? Every morning when I wake up, I decide I am going to catch up with this television show. And so for the first half of this year, actually for most of this year, because it had a really long runtime, I watched an episode of Malcolm in the Middle every morning when I woke up. That's now finished. I've moved on to My Name is Earl, and I'm essentially halfway through that one. And then once I'm finished with that, I'm going to go on to another one. And so, to answer your question, that's exactly what I'd want to do. I'd want to be able to say to myself, okay, I really like Justified. I'm going to watch one episode every day. You know, something like that. And, you know, the on-demand is the way of the future. That's what it is. However, it is not what we watched, because Netflix is a computer program. We watched movies on Netflix, and I actually didn't watch anything else. So maybe Damien should talk about what he watched.
Sure.
Oh wait, on the side, before you go any further, because I just want to cap this off with House of Cards since you brought it up.
Yeah.
I'm 7 episodes in at this point, and I downright love the show. There was a movie, I think it's a couple years ago or a little bit more, that came out with Kevin Spacey where he was a lobbyist. It was based on a true story.
Oh, yes, yes.
Imagine that movie with a less ridiculous character and a much better perspective on politics times David Fincher.
Well,
and
why are you starting with that movie as a base? I saw a piece of that movie and it looked horrible. I looked on the internet and they all agreed with me.
Because that movie is horrible. But here lies the thing. The movie, the character that Kevin Spacey plays is similar to the character we're watching here. Mainly because it's kind of all around politics and all about Washington, D.C. And we still get that same fourth wall breaking, which happens a lot in this show.
Yeah, that was from the first show, too, that they did that. Mm-hmm. I've seen, I think, like, some of the first episode of the old one. And, yeah, it's very similar.
My only disappointment, and I guess this shouldn't really be a disappointment because I couldn't expect it to be true, was that David Fincher doesn't direct the entire series. He's only directed the first 2 episodes. So expect a lot of, like, you can notice a lot of changes when you hit, like, the 3rd episode, which is done by James Foley, which is the guy who did Glengarry Glen Ross, if you don't know that name offhand. Sorry?
No, don't worry. I was about to say something infinitely stupid.
Yeah. I think I know where you're going. If there's a Beverly Hills Cop there.
No.
Okay.
No.
So it wasn't that stupid.
No, it wasn't that stupid.
All right, well, the show is really good. I'm hoping to be through it before the weekend is out. Yeah. Thank you, Netflix, and I can't wait for more of this kind of content, including the next season of Arrested Development.
Okay, so what else have you seen, Andrew, since you've already taken the floor?
Alright, I finally watched Schindler's List for the very first time.
For the what? The first time? Are you serious?
For the first time.
Oh my, okay, what did you think?
I haven't seen Schindler's List. For the past couple of years.
I have to say that I'm in a similar boat.
I should watch that again.
This movie is fantastic. I mean, I found it really interesting that Spielberg decided to give us this war drama all through kind of like a business mogul movie of Oskar Schindler making his fortune using the war as an opportunity to get cheap labor and do all of these backhanded deals. But some of the imagery that Spielberg like puts into this movie is downright criminal. I mean, I guess this is the obvious one people pick on because it kind of stands out as opposed to the others, because this is one of the few points in which they kind of bleed color into the movie, which is there's this scene where we have a little girl in a red coat, and we know it's red because they actually put the color on the screen for us for this one scene where we see the girl's coat in red as the rest of the frame is black and white, where she's walking through the town as Ray Fiennes' character is just massacring the place and catching up all of the Jews going to the ghetto who are hiding out, and it's just fantastic to see that transition of Schindler from the first half of the movie where he is a war profiteer to the second half of the movie where he's using his character as being a war profiteer to try and save as many Jews as he can. I don't know what form of praise I can put on this movie that hasn't been put on before. Right? This movie is fantastic. I loved it from start to finish. I mean, this was one of those movies which I held off watching because every time I said, I should watch that movie, I look and I see it's like over 3 hours and I say, alright, I'll go on to something else now. And I hate myself for thinking that was my excuse. But yeah, Schindler's List is downright fantastic. The next movie I watched was I saw The ABCs of Death, the film that we talked about the trailer for, and I have to come back and say that it is a film in which, if you don't know, it's a vignette of 26 horror short films done by 27 different directors, all going through the alphabet. They're all given a letter, and they're to create a short film about death. And use some topic based on that starts with their letter that they're given. It's exactly what I expected, in the fact that there are a lot of shorts I didn't like, there are a lot of shorts that I was okay with, and there were a few shorts that I really liked. I have to say that the Japanese filmmakers came out on top based on the ones I saw, the ones that I was seeing. I mean, there was one called the one for I don't even say their name, because how they structure it is that they show you the short and then they kind of give you what the short is about, and sometimes it's kind of fun to sit down and go like, oh, that guessing while you're watching the short as to what each one means. I like the one for F a lot, the one for T, there's one for M which is just kind of crazy. And I mean, even the final one which they play, like, Japan is really weird, guys. It's really funny. But it's nothing that, but at the same time, it's nothing that I would openly recommend to people. I won't even recommend it to you guys. Like, I was thinking about making it the movie that we talk about tonight, but I decided against it because all I'd get is vitriol from the two of you, as you'd probably forget what each short was about as you moved on. But it's a fun movie to, if you're a ridiculous horror fan, this is a movie that you should seek out. But the final movie I really want to talk about today, which I saw, I watched this movie called Girl Walk All Day, which is a film that's a little over an hour, which you can watch for free online over at girlwalkallday.com, which is about this woman. Her character is called Girl, where she's basically just dancing through New York City throughout the film, and it tells like literally the baseline of story throughout the movie. It just plays out this mix album, which I think someone told me the album itself was called All Day. I could be wrong. I haven't checked this up.
Oh, I know what movie you're talking about. That has something to do with Girl Talk. Girl Talk does the music.
Right, that's
that.
The album. Yeah. Girl Talk, sorry.
No, Girl Talk is the name of the guy. He's like a DJ, and what he does is he mixes a lot of existing... It's almost like found music, in a sense.
Yeah.
He mixes a lot of already established songs together to make something new.
Yeah, so that's the album they took, and they just basically had this girl, and there were a couple other main characters. There was one called Guy and the other called Creep, which are two dudes. And I actually really enjoyed this movie. As I say, it's a baseline of a story. The girl is going through New York City, and I mean, there's even this one point, like, they have literally no dialogue throughout the movie, but there's this one point where she comes up against a couple of Jews. They look like they're rabbis. They have, like, the full garb, and for the one point throughout this movie, they actually put up a subtitle where the guy, because it looks very obvious that she has gotten no permission to do this movie, and she's just going around and random real people are interacting with her, or they're just staring at her going like, why are you dancing? And that's kind of what they ask her, why are you dancing? And she says, because I'm happy. And their response is, you should be happy always. And that's kind of what I feel this movie is. It's just a representation of happy. Because I don't think there was a point in this movie where I wasn't smiling. The only part that I don't like is that it's actually broken up into parts on the website, so you have to kind of watch like an 8-minute clip of a scene or a chapter, and then you have to click to the next one, so it's kind of like that. But it's just about like 65 minutes or so in total, and it's a really fun, enjoyable movie. I think this is my plastic bag jellyfish, guys. I don't expect you to like it, but I really enjoyed it so much.
Actually, I was thinking of watching it because I do like Girl Talk a lot.
Don't bring the theory into this. That's unnecessary. Just keep your terrible movies to yourself. Leave the theory out of this. Alright.
So, Damian.
So, yeah, that's what I've been watching this week.
Alright. So, I'm going to talk about two movies up front that I've spoken about before. I've watched them again, and I've kind of changed my position. It's not a complete 180, but I've softened to both these movies. Beast of the Southern Wild, we didn't talk about a lot. When he came up, I just said it feels kind of pretentious and is like artsy for artsy's sake, and I didn't really like it. And
fuck that movie!
Upon rewatching it, it doesn't feel as pretentious the second time. It feels like they were trying to tell this unique story with this small child, and they came up with creative ways of how to do it, and because it's this small child, and it's from her perspective, she kind of there's some imagery there that only makes sense if you see it through her eyes. The issue I had the first time I saw it is that at the end of the movie, the beast that she's talking, there's some beasts that she's imagining that are coming towards her. And at the end of the movie, the beasts confront her. And for a second there, it looked like the other people there could see these imaginary creatures. So I'm not sure, and the movie isn't explicit whether or not the creatures did show up or they didn't. But that's kind of besides the point. But that was kind of a hang up the first time I saw it. This time I kind of understood the feel that they were going for. There is a heavy emphasis on polar ice caps melting and that raising the water level, and that I think was overdone. I mean, this girl is a small girl and she hasn't had any education essentially, and so for them to constantly force in that imagery of, you know, the waters are rising because she did something, and because of that the polar ice caps are melting, and like that, they kind of overdid it. And there was a couple sections there that felt kind of superfluous. They were just there because they could put them in the movie. I didn't really think. There's a couple scenes with them eating crabs that, guys, we understand. You don't have to show them drinking and partying every night. We understand how these people live. The movie starts out showing that these people enjoy living in Bathtub, that's the name of the place, and they have more holidays than everybody, and they party all the time, as perceived by this small girl. And they revisit that, essentially the same thing, about four times, and two of those times, you learn nothing new. You just learn that these people eat a lot of seafood and drink a lot of alcohol and feel happy, which I guess is fine. What I will say to the movie's credit though is there's a certain point of the movie when this little girl is put into a shelter essentially, and they put a dress on this little girl and comb her hair, and just seeing that imagery after seeing this essentially wild child, I guess. It felt like seeing her in a dress, it felt wrong, which I'm pretty sure that's what they were going for, and they achieved that. And so while I don't love the movie anywhere near as much as Andrew, I no longer feel that the movie was terrible.
Side note before you go any further.
Sure.
I don't quite love this movie. I just found a bit of the perspective, because I read into it more of the New Orleans side of the story as something worth looking into. I'm not interested in watching this movie again, because as you talk about it, I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to go through all of that beast talking again, even though I kind of like that crab scene a lot. Because I just watched it and I'm like, are these guys brainwashing this child into thinking she's going to be the strongest thing ever? I don't think so. I don't think we're in Tarzan time anymore.
Well, that's not really what they were doing, but that's neither here nor there. The movie's okay. I don't think it's a travesty anymore. The other movie is a movie that Douglas has seen and we reviewed on the podcast. I rewatched Wild Strawberries. Douglas doesn't like this movie, if I remember correctly.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
I appreciated the movie. Mm-hmm. I thought it was okay, but it did suffer from some of, you know, the old movie-itis kind of thing.
Right, and Andrew is in love head over heels with this movie.
No, I think Andrew hated this movie.
Also very wrong there.
No, Andrew hated the movie?
Yes, yeah, so Andrew hated the movie. Andrew's, I kind of liked the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that Andrew was the one that liked it and you were the one that hated it. But once again, I kind of fall in more to your side.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I watched it, I had a couple of issues. I felt that the movie took too long to kind of get to its point. It's not a very long movie, and so when you waste essentially 45 minutes before getting to why we're here, what this movie is going to be about. They kind of showed you kind of what he was like. He kind of under, because we've seen so many movies, we knew that he was a old man faced with the end of his life, and get it, this award is giving him some chance to look back. And you know it's a movie about mortality, and especially the first flashback was unnecessary. I mean, by and large, they could have done without all of that. And I think that was what my main issue with the movie was the first time I saw it. But now, seeing it again, I guess because I had seen it once before, now I kind of knew what to expect. And I could appreciate more of the movie, more of what the movie was trying to do. And, I mean, part of me wants to say, you know, this was done in 59 or 57, and so, you know, it's kind of impressive for a movie dealing with this. But then I remember that Ikiru came out about the same time, and it's a far superior movie. But the movie itself, it gets a lot of things right. I especially enjoy his relationship to the three children that he picks up. And I enjoy the fact that they, throughout the film, kind of serve as a buffer against this man's, you know, depressing life. Like, the movie starts out and you don't know that this man is, you know, was this ass. I mean, he wasn't projected as such. You see him and his housekeeper, and they have this kind of playful banter at the start, and then the second he gets into the car, we have the girl say that she doesn't like him, and then everybody just continues to say that, you know, this man isn't, he wasn't the greatest guy, he wasn't the greatest father. And having the children there to kind of buffer some of that, it wasn't just this terribly depressing movie all the way to the end. The tone wasn't consistent though, especially with that first flashback. Like, why is that there? That does not set up that he's this terrible man that is looking for any form of redemption. That just shows you that he was in love with a cousin, and the cousin chose someone else. But you don't see where, you know, he was crushed by that. Yeah, I guess you just have to
you have to make that leap,
right? Yes, sure. And but the movie, it wasn't anywhere near as bad as as the first time I watched it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I especially enjoyed the end of the movie. I enjoyed the scene that kind of turned it all around for me. It was in the car when the daughter-in-law explained the position of her husband, his son. And I went, oh, right, there's some actual real movie making, a real story going on here. It shouldn't have taken an hour to get to this point, but thanks. And I was kind of trepidatious. I didn't want them to rush through the ending. But then I already knew by that point that they didn't. They just kind of left a lot unresolved, which I appreciated. It's, you don't always need movies to tell you every single thing that happens from start to end. And so those are the two movies that I felt I should talk about. I also saw Celeste and Jesse together forever and ever and ever. The movie's great.
Awesome.
It is one of those, like, we keep seeing movies like that where it's not like Hollywood has the what do they call those movies? The
mumblecore?
No.
Rom-com.
Right. Hollywood has rom-com, and indies have essentially the opposite of that. And we've seen a couple of movies like this one, and this doesn't really break the mold in any way, but it is entertaining.
That's all.
It
I
is
ask.
Well acted. The only thing that feels out of place is Elijah Wood is in the movie. He plays
is he best friended?
No, he isn't. And how can I put this? He's a gay character, and so I guess what they did was say, all right, you know how every girl has a gay best friend? This is not that person. He's gay and he's terrible at it, and he's also her boss or her partner, and he's just awkward the entire time. And I get that is what they set out to do. Kind of said, you know, we're not going to have the gay best friend. We're going to have a gay friend, but terrible at this whole friendship thing. And they kind of made their point, but it was a unnecessary point to make. It felt forced. It's the only part of the movie that I could see where writers sat down and came up with a way to change that stereotype. But the movie is fun. It is, there's so many little things about the movie that remind me of what's the John Krasinski, Away We Go.
Oh, right. That movie is so good.
It is Away We Go in reverse, essentially. It is not them falling into love and building a stronger friendship. It is them falling out of love, but still at the end building a stronger friendship. And it's nice to see that guy from Saturday Night Live and terrible Adam Sandler
Andy Samberg
can actually act.
He's so funny.
Yes, he
is. He's really funny. I'm just sad that he left. Well, I was not a big fan of SNL to start with, right? I watched the occasional episode. But
on a side note with SNL, there was an episode recently where they had Jennifer Lawrence to host.
Right.
And I kind of watched the opening of that episode where they had her monologue. And god damn it, was it horrible. It was so bad.
Yeah, it can be very bad. Because a lot of these, well, at least Jennifer Lawrence is an actress. And most of them, I guess, are in that kind of field, that host. But sometimes it just doesn't work. But yes, Andy Samberg is a hilarious man, and I'm very upset that he left SNL to go and do this horrible television show in England called Cuckoo.
Yeah, okay. Bad. Right.
Really bad.
Andrew spoke about his film that he can watch 30 seconds of on the internet or whatever. Disney put out a short film this week that was all over the internet. It's called Paper Man. It's about 7 minutes.
I.e. the best part of Wreck-It Ralph.
So that was in Wreck-It Ralph?
That was the short film they played before Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, well, I didn't see that. Right, so Paper Man is tremendous. And what I found funny is, after I downloaded it from YouTube, I put it in XBMC just to see what would happen. And sure enough, XBMC was on point.
Of course.
All the information was there.
It didn't bring up the Ryan Reynolds movie?
Huh? No.
Up the Ryan Reynolds it's the movie?
Disney. No. They got it right. They got that it was the Disney short film. They had cover art for it, despite it being a short. They had background art for it. Just amazing. I love that program so much. The short is about...
Is it weird that I've gotten to the point where I will go to any Disney film, not just because I want to see the Disney film, but because I'm looking forward to whatever short film they have before it?
That is because, what Disney...
I wanted to see Wreck-It Ralph, but regardless of how disappointed I was with that movie, I was happy that I got to see Paper Man.
Yeah, I'd have paid money to watch that. It's really good. It's one of their better shots that I've seen in a long time. The final movie that I'll talk about, well, it's not really a movie. 30 Rock ended this week. They had their...
But there was no Matt Damon...
Season finale.
Can I tell you, I'm so far behind in that show. I think I'm at least 5 or 6 episodes behind.
There's no rush. I thought they were going to blow it out like their live episodes. I thought they were going to go towards that end. But they didn't. They did a straightforward version of 30 Rock. They did 2 episodes. And 30 Rock at its end is nowhere near as it was in the first 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch 30 Rock, you know what they're in for. And while they've been consistent, and it's been a consistent decline. It's not a steep decline. So it ended and it didn't leave like a bad taste. They didn't try anything overly stupid to make you regret watching it. But they didn't go for the spectacle. Their best episode this season was the two live episodes, which were fun. And I'm going to miss 30 Rock because I don't think they're going to replace it with anything nearly as good. And seeing that Community is never coming back.
Is that actually going to happen now, finally? Is Community actually cancelled?
I don't know.
Because I hear Chevy Chase is out, right?
Chevy Chase quit the show. Yeah. But the show is coming back at the end of February, this month. Okay. But Chevy Chase is apparently going to be in a lot of the season because they had already filmed a lot of those episodes before.
Yeah.
Before he quit. But the show will come back. I don't know if it'll last long enough that we'll see the whole season on TV or we'll even see another season. Because this is the first season without Dan Harmon. But jumping back to 30 Rock, I just want to say I think it's very worth it just for that one line that Tracy Jordan, why can't I remember his real name right now?
Tracy Morgan.
Tracy Morgan. They're both Tracys. This is Scotch number 6. Leave me alone. Where he says, I don't care if you watched, we still got paid.
Yep. I mean, that is the thing. In season 5, it kind of felt like you are watching for those like 3 or 4 really funny small things in the episodes instead of just having the entire episode be this ridiculous thing that you enjoy from start to finish. But it is kind of remarkable that NBC had this show on for this long. I guess they couldn't find it because they've been at odds with the amount of ratings that this show has gotten pretty much from the get-go. So I'm glad that they got to close it out and it's not going to be a Community situation. Guys, I don't think Community is the last. Going to be a whole lot of internet backlash because they fired the guy that made Community. So even without watching the show, the internet will poo-poo a lot of it. And 2, I don't see how they're going to... I mean, I know he wasn't the only writer, but I cannot see them making the show more crazy. And Community was season by season just more and more crazy to the point there's an animated episode. Like, they blew out the craziness in Community, and I don't see them continuing that. But I don't know, hopefully they do, hopefully it's great. But it's the thing where when they change something, you kind of want it to fail because they change the guy that made it great, but you kind of worry that it might be better. Like, what if he leaves and they make it even crazier and even more amazing, right? Then you're going to feel like, you know, some bad shit went down, but no, it's even more awesome. So I don't know, but I'm definitely going to watch it if it comes back. And that's pretty much it. I saw a movie that, unless one of you talk about in the next week, will be my movie that we're reviewing.
What's that?
I'm not going to tell you what it was.
Lazy Sunday, wake up in the late afternoon. Call Parnell just to see how he's doing. Hello, what up, Parn?
Yo, Sandberg, what's crackin'?
You thinking what I'm thinking?
Party up!
Man, it's happening.
Reverse my hunger pains, I'm sticking like duct
tape. Hit up Magnolia and Mac on some cupcakes.
No doubt that bakery's got all that Bob Frosty.
It's not there. You're still screwed.
Sorry, the first trailer I wanted to talk about is a trailer for Byzantium.
Yes.
The new, I was about to say zombie, but that's completely wrong. The new,
Neil
Jordan film, yep, which is about vampires, starring Saoirse Ronan, who I'm pretty sure I've just butchered her name.
Yes, you have.
My mother did 3 things for me. One.
Come then.
She spared my life the day that I was born. Dead, I won't. Two. She paid for my upkeep on her knees and on her back.
Kiss me.
Why?
In celebration of my wickedness.
And three. She gave me the story I can never tell.
If she lived with a secret, what would you do?
There is a code that we survive by, Ellen. Keep it.
Ellen has written a story. In her story, she says that she lived.
This is the man who gave us the Butcher Boy, so Damien, go.
Right, so Gemma Arterton is terrible and the director is terrible. The answer is no. Though, Miss Ronin is amazing and I love her just about anything. But I will not tolerate Butcher Boy and Gemma Arterton in the same film, so no. The trailer was interesting though.
I have to say that I'm definitely coloring this trailer with the fact that I got a lot of opinions of this movie while I was in Toronto, because not a lot of people I know who saw this movie liked it. And it just doesn't give me that good vampire movie vibe. It's is there a good vampire movie? There's the right one in. But vampires have been going through a bad rap recently.
Look, if they're not sparkly, they won't make any money.
Sparkling vampires are over, Damien. Get over it.
Douglas Robinson, mm-hmm. Do you like this trailer? We are pressed for time. So
This trailer looks average. Mm-hmm. I'm neither for nor against. Mm-hmm. I like Saoirse Ronan. Right. I'm not that keen on Tamara Drew.
She gave me a story.
So, yeah,
And Butcher Boy director,
actually,
he is your favorite.
He's my favorite.
Yes, I'm
neither here nor there.
Fine. So the second trio we'll talk about that our supreme overlord forced us to watch is War Witch. Now, War Witch is a terrible name for anything.
It is a film that is nominated for Best Foreign Film in the Oscars this year.
I understand. The name is still terrible, but the trailer is interesting. I especially like that shot close to the end where she's standing on a little rock and there is people covered in mud walking down this hillside, and that shot is amazing, and essentially for that shot and that shot alone, I'm really interested in watching it. I don't like films that deal with this subject matter because they never take it far enough, in my opinion. There's always a point where they say we probably don't want to show just how terrible all of this is. And we also don't want to be, we don't want to essentially make anybody argue the point that we're being racist by making this movie, which is a ridiculous thing, but they always do it. I remember when, god damn it, Hotel Rwanda, when that movie came out, I remember there was a lot of debate about, you know, them showing certain things in the movie and that it was too graphic. And they were showing that, you know, these African people were this way or that way, and they kind of missed some points. And, you know, racism was thrown up as usual because it's the internet. But I still want to watch this movie just for that one shot. That shot looks real good. And I think if they have more things like that in the movie, it will be, I could tolerate it. That's not to say that I don't think the movie can be good. I just hope that it will be. I'm not sure of that. Douglas, War Witch, what say you?
It doesn't really interest me.
Well done. Andrew Robinson.
I'm actually very interested in this movie. I mean, I get what you're saying, Damien, and I think, like, you probably have a better footing in the topic because you actually read the news as opposed to me. In the fact that, you know, you have this feeling deep down inside where you feel that they maybe are not going that far, just like what Quentin Tarantino was talking about when he was asked about racism when he was talking about Django Unchained, where he's like, I went that far, but I'm pretty sure anything you see in that movie is like a tenth or a hundredth of whatever really existed. So stop complaining. But with this movie, like, I guess you kind of get that feeling whenever they talk about any African war, I don't even know what word to say at this point, nation. There's the, you talk about that one shot. The shot for me is the one where you get to see all of these people in, like, this covered in this white powder. And when you finally see them call the girl a witch because she survived what you can assume is some insane gun battle. I'm very looking forward to this movie. I want to see it so bad right now. Little child, running wild. Watch a while. See, he never smiled. Broken home, father gone. Mama tired. So is all.
Θα κάνουμε ένα τεστ. Θα χρησιμοποιήσουμε αυτό το αντικείμενο. Αν δεν αλλάξει χρώμα και παραμείνει λευκό, θα σημαίνει αυτόματα ότι είσαι ικανή και αξιόπιστη να παραμείνεις μαζί μας.
All right. So Andrew Robinson, you asked us to watch a movie this week. Will you kindly well, I'm tired. Will you kindly tell us what the movie was and what the movie is about?
So, the movie I asked us to review this week is called Alps. It is the third, I believe third, feature-length film by, I don't know his name, who directed Dogtooth, which we all discussed, but I don't think ever got released, and also I don't think any of us actually liked. This movie is about a group of individuals who call themselves the Alps, who decide to reenact scenes of people's lives where they are playing the role of someone who has died. So this is an act of going through the grieving process for a family. I wasn't that interested in this movie to begin with, but because I was going, that's a guy who did Dogtooth, and I didn't like that movie. That movie had a weird premise, and we kind of bought into it because we were like, it looks like an idea that is odd, and he looks like he knows how to make something look pretty, so we're going to want to watch that film because we like movies. But somehow I got dragged in because the more and more podcasts who brought up this movie kind of cued me into what the movie was really about. So I kind of had that moment of interest. So I decided that we should review this film. So I have to say, watching this movie, that I was very intrigued by this film because there are so many moments where I was left wondering what was happening. And it kind of threw my mind into a deep, dark spiral of trying to figure out the characters. I wonder if Damon's enjoying this because I'm down to my eighth scotch.
No. I'm looking at Douglas trying to decipher the movie that I'm going to pick. But he's doing a terrible job of it. So this is good.
So, okay. There are these series of characters. And I think the character that we focus most on is this woman who's a nurse. She goes under the title of Monte Rosa. Because at one point throughout the movie, early in the movie, they tell us that they're going to name their group the Alps, and each member is going to name themselves after a mountain that is actually in the Alps. And this woman calls herself Monte Rosa. And one of the main contentions throughout this film is the fact that there's this woman who was in a car crash, who is a tennis player, who dies, and she then takes on the role of this tennis player for her family, without telling the Alps that she's doing this. So, like, I sit down there and I wonder, watching this movie, the question I was asked is why is she doing this? Why? Because it's obvious throughout the movie that she's lying to this group that she's a part of the Alps. She's breaking all of these rules. You see, there's this one point in the movie where she's asked to have sex with one of these guys who she's on a substitution with. That's what they call it. They don't call it acting roles. They call it a substitution. And she even says to the guy, don't tell the head guy from the Alps that I've done this. She's like, sure, I won't tell them. And she lies to even her father, about the fact that she's going out to go and do one thing when she's going out to do, some Alps work. But the sad part about this movie is it never truly answers this question. And I'm left to kind of wonder about it, and I think it's my own fault by the fact that I watched this movie like around an hour before, well, actually 2 hours since we started late of doing this podcast. I'm trying to think about where in this movie gave me an answer as to what this woman is doing and why she feels she needs to lie to this group. Is she just a compulsive, crazy person, or is there some true need in her character that she needs to go off on her own? So when we get to that eventual end point where she's discovered that she's been lying to the group, is which comes in its own craziness, because then we get group justice, and I won't go into that much. The movie is kind of insane. The reason why I picked this movie is that when we talked about Dogtooth, we saw an interesting premise with poor execution, and I was willing to give this filmmaker a second chance, in that when I heard what this movie was about, as I said, people who are reenacting roles of people in a family structure, in grieving situations, that this sounded like it would be kind of interesting. I kind of put it akin to Damien's movie that he said is weird and refuses to explain, Holy Motors, to deal with people enacting scenes in real life. But watching this movie, I don't think I would quite put it on that level. It felt very, very out of place when you try to compare them. Though, am I more interested by the idea than the execution? I think not so much. I think that the execution in this film, as opposed to Dogtooth, is quite on a whole nother level. Dogtooth, it felt like he was just introducing new weird things every corner to try and keep us interested, and then we kind of ran out towards the end where we were begging an explanation. We were trying to ask the filmmaker, help me follow you, but he wasn't quite giving us that answer. In this movie, I felt he did a lot better in helping us as viewers enjoy and understand what he was going through in this movie. But at the same time, I don't think I could give you a concrete answer as to what was the motivation of the main character. And as I say, the main character was probably Monte Rosa, the nurse lady. Damien, you, I think, was the most interested in Dogtooth at the time, and the one who was most wishing that it was a great film. Were you won over by this filmmaker, giving this filmmaker a second chance, or no?
No. I watched this movie twice. I watched it earlier in the week, and that the movie made no sense. And I rewatched it, not fully, kind of skipping through because I read what the movie was supposedly about. And I said, alright, now that I have some context to this jumble of scenes, maybe now the movie will make more sense. And came away disappointed a second time. The director is clearly giving us his vision. At least, I hope so. If there are other people that are influencing his decisions and making these movies terrible, if there's a good movie somewhere and it is being cut by other people, that is fine. But I doubt that very much. It seems, the movie seems singular. Both this and Dogtooth seem singular in vision. And while I can appreciate that because every now and again we get things like that and they are amazing, this movie is a hot mess. It does not tell a story, at least no story that I can find. And I heard what you said, but the only reason you have said any of those things is because you heard other people talk about the movie, and while watching it you kind of made these connections. But the movie is disjointed, to say the least. The movie kind of starts and the movie kind of ends, and if there are things in the middle of the movie that connect the start, thin shot, and the ending shot, I miss them, not once, but twice. I think the movie is purposefully, you know, doing these things, but that doesn't help me enjoy the film or appreciate what is going on. It feels, watching this movie, It is the same feeling I got watching Dogtooth. I'm not as angry because I assumed that this movie was going to be terrible the second I saw who was directing it. But it is still disappointing to know that now, on the second movie that I've seen, I can now establish a pattern. Before it was just blind hatred based off one movie. Now it is justifiable hatred. He is now 0-2. And I doubt I'll watch anything from him ever again. I think he's a strong director. I think he's terrible at writing. And I don't think he knows how to edit movies. I don't think he knows how to get these shots to come together as one cohesive thing to tell any kind of story. This movie just felt, it felt like it was actively trying to be a bad movie. Like, they could have told a simple story, and just so that he could go, you know, this movie is different, he went down this road. And I mean, if Andrew didn't pick this movie, I wasn't going to go down that road with him again. But now I can tell everybody that even if you guys pick another movie from this guy, and the whole world says this is the best movie, the mere fact that he is on as director will mean that I won't watch it. I don't want to see anything more from this guy. I mean, the thing, if there was a situation where he did one great movie and now has spiraled down into this dark hole where he only makes movies for himself, and I went, well, at least there's something there that I can point on, because that was awesome. But he's made two shit movies and I'm not watching anymore of them. Douglas.
Andrew. Did you say that you liked this movie?
No, he did not. He said he is intrigued by the movie.
He's intrigued. So Andrew,
right,
did
he's
you
lying
like,
to himself.
So Andrew, do you like this movie?
Do I like this movie? I don't think I'm ready to answer that question.
So, through while watching this movie, It was a constant.
And Douglas, uh-huh. I remind you that this is Scotch number 8.
Yes. Awesome.
And this is a family show.
Yes. So, listen. While I watch this movie...
I hold myself unaccountable for anything I say at this point.
Alright, good. But I was constantly fighting the urge to stop. Just stop watching and do something more productive. Thoughts went through my mind while watching this movie, such as, fuck you, Andrew just doesn't say it enough. Thoughts like, why didn't he just ask me to watch Dogtooth again? And you know how I hated Dogtooth.
None of us like that.
Andrew, this movie is, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's, if bad was a barrier up here, it would be like 6 feet below. This movie, Andrew, is disgusting. It doesn't tell me why I'm watching this movie. Some movies do that, though. Some movies, you know, it's slowly but surely you say, oh, that's what's happening here. That never happens. This movie is nonsensical. Makes no sense, but that's kind of a tad bit redundant. But Andrew, I can find nothing good to say about this film. This film was unentertaining. It just rambled and sauntered on in what I can only assume, well, I don't even know what direction it went in.
So I'm going to play the part of the internet here. But if you don't like this movie, then you're not a true film connoisseur. It is challenging film, and in that way it is challenging the viewers, right, to look past things that you've come to know and love about movies and enjoy what is on the screen. Douglas, why can't you do that?
Because what is on the screen is pure and utter shit. so listen, at its core, right, I can kind of see a story, right, but they didn't play it up, right? The story is that they have this service, they have this mafia like mentality.
For no reason.
I have a club and I'm going to do the club test.
Yeah. No, I saw that one coming. I was like, I know what he's going to say. Right. And I know what he's
going to
do.
Right. Because I've seen Dogtooth and I know that this man is going to do this thing.
Is it weird that when that scene came up, I just kind of went, I want to say about how this director has a question as violence towards women. Because both Dogtooth had that moment where he had the, what was it, a video cassette player? And it was to the woman who he just beat the shit out of.
Andrew, I don't want to talk about this director. I want to talk about his... Whatever issues he has is fine. Because, as I stated earlier, not watching any more of this. But the movie... I don't understand why. Alright, you brought up Holy Motors. Holy Motors doesn't really have a why, right? But it has a where and a how until that last scene.
And honestly, I can forgive any movie for foolishness if it entertains me. This movie didn't entertain me. If it was entertaining and still nonsensical, I'm fine with that. I'm the biggest fan of Fury. I love Holy Motors. I love all sorts of Michel Gondry films that don't make any
sense. The thing about the movie I find kind of unforgivable is that the premise that is set up in the description, because I didn't realize that until I read the description, of having these people provide this service where they play dead people. That is, if you need a setup for a movie, there you go.
Yeah, that's...
Just tell me a story based on that. Mm-hmm. Keep the gymnastics out of it. Keep the Alps and the names of the mountains out of it. None of that. None of that helps tell
and you know,
the actual story.
You know what was really bad about there. This movie? But this movie was so bland. It was so the acting, the way and it's clearly a conscious decision. Right. But the way that lines are just delivered, they're delivered. It's as if I'm reading out of a book and somebody told me, no, don't use any inflections. Just say the quick fox jump.
So, okay,
over
Douglas.
And so,
There's this one scene in the movie where we actually see there's the scene with Monte Rosa, as I call her, with some guy in a store with lamps, a lot of lamps and chandeliers and such.
Mm-hmm.
Where the first run through, it kind of looks like a practice run through, and then they do a second run through where they're very a bit more emotional in how they.
I'm glad you adjusted your very
in how they deliver their lines. Do you get a feeling like at that moment that everything we saw before was a quote-unquote run-through as to what we were watching as opposed to the more emotional version?
Andrew, you're bearing the lead so far. It is now dead and on its way to China. What, those scenes that you're talking, that scene, there's a couple of questions. Why is it in English? What are they doing? Why are they doing it? And the scene that directly follows, what is any of this movie in it? Like, Andrew, I don't blame you, right? You heard that the Dogtooth guy had another movie, and you said Dogtooth was terrible. There's no way, right? You're like, there's just no way. And at the very least, even if it's terrible, we'll have something to talk about. Well, we've talked about it. You're trying to defend a poor choice, and I accept that. Right? You find it intriguing and whatnot. That is fair. What I'm saying to you, Andrew, is do not pick any more of this guy's movies because I'm not going to watch them. Douglas is not going to pick any of them. And even if you bring up one of his movies on the podcast, I'm just going to let you know that no matter what you say, even if you say it is the worst thing you've ever seen, I'm going to disagree with you. Even because if you say it is that bad, I'm going to argue that it is even worse having not seen the film. Alright? I do not like this director. Alright? That is a holistic statement that I'm putting down now. I don't want to hear from him anymore. Alright? Because it is not
I think we can agree.
I just like
he
to
goes
say,
into the
like you can look at the Google chat right now. Yeah. I started around here.
Oh god.
It's at here. That much scotch.
Yes. Yeah. That's nice, Andrew. But there we just added this director to the Pantheon to the bad shelf.
All right.
So we're not allowed to talk about
him
anymore.
Tyler Perry. who else is on our shit list?
Brad Brett.
Who is that?
Brad Brett. Ryan Brett. Why can't I remember his name right now? Guy who did the next Hannibal Lecter movie, Red Dragon. Guy who did Red Dragon.
Brett Ratner.
Brett Ratner. I knew there was a Brett in there.
Oh, sure. Sure. Alright. So this has been the Unnamed Movie Podcast. For the love of all that is good and holy, don't watch any of this guy's movies.
So what you're saying is that this guy's movies falls under transgressions against cinema.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it
does. Yeah.
Everything he makes is a transgression against cinema.
And a crime against humanity. The only thing I'll watch is his Trial at the Hague. That's the only thing I'll watch. you can find Andrew's writing on G-Man Reviews. You can find us doing this podcast also on G-Man Reviews. We're all on Twitter. Guys, I can't do Twitter. Every time I even think about writing something on Twitter, I read some of the shit that is on there and I go, I don't want to be a part of this service anymore.
Hey, did you see that China hacked the shit out of them today?
Of the Times, yeah.
No.
Oh, out of Twitter? Right, yeah. And so like 250,000 passwords. Of course. Good on you, China.
Boy.
Please bring that service down to the ground.
It's all code words now. Nobody says China anymore. Ever since Eric Schmidt came out and said, China is essentially, you know, a sophisticated hacker. Everybody's like, this was a sophisticated attack.
Right.
Wink.
Hey guys.
And one in a series of many, you know.
I love the fact that because China essentially owns the world at this point, no one, no matter what they do, everybody just looks at them and goes, China.
Yeah.
If it weren't for the fact that we owed you zillions of dollars, we'd have attacked the shit out of you by now. But,
well, I mean, just in the public eye that I know of, they hacked Google a few years back.
Yeah.
Recently they've hacked the Times, the Wall Street Journal, and Twitter.
Yep.
Like, wow.
But I'm okay with that mainly because China helped fund Lupo.
Okay, Andrew.
China helped fund what?
Looper.
Lupo.
Okay, Andrew, you, time for you to go to bed.
Yeah, you really are. Super duper drunk.
That is it from us. You can, as Damien was saying, you can find us on Twitter. Andrew is G-Man Reviews. I am DJR Lost His Name, and Damien is Damien _ White. That is White with a Y, YHITE.
Yep. YTE.
Or YTE. So, thank you for listening and good night.
There'll be three white horses all in a line. There'll be three white horses in a line. See?